The ocean impacts daily life for people around the world.
3.5 billion people rely on it as their main source of food.
And for many people, the ocean is a fundamental part of their identity and culture.
I'm McKenna Kaleko. I grew up in California, just an hour away from the iconic Pacific coastline.
I'm Kialani Diamond. I study in a marine science program at Seahurst Beach.
And I'm Hayden Anderson. I've lived by the Puget Sound waterfront for my entire life.
And you're listening to a Radioactive podcast. Radioactive is where teens make radio at KUOW Public Radio in Seattle, where we're surrounded by water.
Our goal is to find out about how people in our area are connected to water.
So today we're exploring people's connections to the bodies of water around them. And to do that, we're going on a journey through the layers of the ocean.
Metaphorically.
So grab your life preserver or your scuba gear. Put on your wetsuits, maybe jump on a boat.
And we'll start where the tide meets the sand.
The surface of the ocean, or any body of water for that matter, is the one we see and interact with most often. People swim, fish, and surf up here. I wanted to talk to someone who spends a lot of time on the surface of the water. So, as we start here, floating amongst the seaweed, I talked to Mark Nichols, or as I know him, Mr. Nichols. He's an open water swimmer and also my science teacher. Before Mr. Nichols was a teacher, and before he was an open water swimmer, he worked at a cardboard factory.
I was stuck in between two conveyor belts, just moving one boxes from one conveyor belt to the other one. And my shoulders started getting sore. And I'm like, I got to keep this job, so I got to strengthen my shoulders back up. So I was living on Capitol Hill when I first moved out here, so I would drive down to Madison Park and start swimming out there.
Mr. Nichols grew up as a competitive swimmer, swimming in warm, chlorinated pools. But when he moved out here from the Midwest, he started swimming in more natural bodies of water, like Washington, Andrew Bay, Madison Park, and working up to the saltier waters of the Puget Sound.
It's just more exciting, you know, in the waves. Big boats will go by and a wave will splash into you, and it's like, it made me laugh, right? Because my whole swimming had been so structured and competitive that it was like, you're swimming, and then all of a sudden, you know, Mother Nature comes along and just, you know, rolls you over or slaps you.
Yeah.
That's where I started to get it more of an appreciation for the open water.
But the open water can be unpredictable.
It took me a while before I figured out, but I thought I saw like an arm, like a Whoa. Person's arm. It's like my overactive imagination running away with me, but I was like, well, I got to turn around and go back. And I'm like, there's no way. There's no way. So I swam back and I'm like, phew, didn't see anything. And then I figured it out too. It's kind of cool. The sunbeams coming down through the seaweed create these shadows and lights where one of them looked like an arm or something.
The way he described the sights in the water, these scarier things he's seen, made me want to learn more about the things like the sounds he's heard. It reminded me of a quote from Donna Tartt's The Secret History. Beauty is terror. Whatever we call beautiful, we quiver before it, because apparently the river talks.
Sometimes you think somebody's shouting at you too. I want to be like, sometimes you'll see something, it wasn't that sound, but it's like, I don't know, it's like the water will talk to you. It's like, hey, it's sort of that sixth sense, you know, your spidey senses. I think they actually are more in tune when you're in that water, sort of like how sound travels, because it's more dense.
Whenever I visit the beach, I like to just stand and take a deep breath. Letting the sounds of the waves roll over my body, the wind carrying away any negative energy. Just letting myself feel the sand between my toes, the silky seaweed against my ankles, the ridges on the seashells.
It's so calming. Go to the ocean. Drive. You don't even have to swim. Just look out over the ocean and that endlessness of it, that whole... It just makes you want to build a boat and go out there, you know, that one movie with the girl who sails away on the boat.
Moana?
Yeah, that one.
Growing up in California, I got to experience the beach so often that when I leave after a visit, I feel as if I leave a part of myself behind. That endless body of blue has a quality to it that is simultaneously terrifying and awe-inspiring. But before we get too carried away, let's dive deeper and explore some more of this uncharted territory.
there's a whole different world under the surface of the water. Countless ecosystems, bubbling and flowing and teeming with life. I've loved marine biology my entire life, and I'd like to pursue a career in that field. Pema Kataev oversees the scientific dives for the University of Washington. She started her journey under the water when she was just a little younger than me, in a marine science program at her own high school, where she had the opportunity to go scuba diving.
And I didn't really care if I saw like big turtles or anything. I just wanted to see the coral and the anemones. And I came home from that trip and I was 15 and I told my parents I wanted to be a diver. And they were really cool about it. It's totally not their thing, but they said, it's your allowance. Do what you want with it.
Pema studied biology at Reed College, taking her junior year off to become a dive master in Utila, Honduras. From there, her diving journey took her all around the world, and eventually she started working for the University of Washington at the Friday Harbor Labs, where she met some researchers who she would later go to Antarctica with.
Yeah, I got to do about 30 dives there as part of a research project that was looking at nudibranchs.
Nudibranchs are a type of shellless marine mollusk, a sea slug. There are 3,000 different species all around the world at different depths of the ocean. Some are poisonous and some just pretend to be. Most of the nudibranchs I've had the opportunity to see around here are smaller than my hand.
We went out to collect some specimen and I found some of the Melibe nudibranchs and they're like the coolest thing.
Yeah.
They're so interesting. I didn't know they smelled like watermelons.
Well, the next time you hold one, I know it sounds really weird, but smell your hand afterwards. You might be surprised.
That's so interesting. I didn't know that.
Anyways, she went with these researchers to Antarctica, and she describes the vastness of the environment there being very different from what she's experienced before.
It had very, very clear visibility, like see for hundreds of feet. It was almost disorienting how clear it was. The people I was working with are specifically looking at egg cases of nudibranchs. So we would go diving looking for those. And yeah, it was fascinating.
This research was being done at the McMurdo Station. A hole is drilled through the ice where the researchers dive, the thickest ice Pema has been through being about 15 feet. Under ice this deep, it gets pretty dark, but a large light is set up so the divers can find their way back.
A scientist who I asked about it before I went down there, she said, oh, don't worry, it'll be like finding the light bulb in the ceiling of the room. And she was right, you know, it's like, shining down, like, it's really obvious from thousands of feet away. It's, yeah, you can't miss it.
Finally, I asked Pema if she had any advice for people who are looking to find careers in marine science, like myself.
Don't be hard on yourself or disappointed if you get rejected from something you want, because that happens a lot. If you can't find a paying job, like able to support yourself completely in your field as an academic marine scientist, it might be okay to volunteer for something and then also do something else on the side where you're just making money, like in food service or something else that interests you.
Marine biology is really interesting, and there's always research going on. That affects you even if you don't know about it or don't really care. For example, there's plankton that produce 70% of the world's oxygen, and that's just one thing. There are organisms everywhere, just existing, and their existence affects ours in big and small ways. That's true, even at the bottom of the ocean.
The bottom of the ocean. Down here, the light that gives the water clarity and certainty has long since vanished. That sense of depth and of reverence we associate with this twilight zone of the ocean was something I couldn't get out of my mind. Just how deep can someone's connection to the water be? To answer this question, I spoke to someone whose connection to and investment in the bodies of water around her is a lot deeper than most.
I like to call myself a forensic biologist because I'm hunting, I'm trying to figure stuff out, and it just sounds cool.
That's Rosa Hunter. She's a lab manager at the Salish Sea Research Center and a local expert in marine microbiology. Despite this, her perspective on water is a lot more personal than just a job. During our conversation, Rosa brought out a framed photograph of her grandmother.
The older I get, the more I look like her. I'm pretty honored with that. My grandmother, Jean Hunter, She's First Nations. Her mother is Native to Canada. My grandmother was a school counselor for Indian Heritage High School in the city. She really kept a short leash on me.
Rosa talks a lot about how her family influences her perspective. And it started from a young age when her grandma would take her down to the water. Rosa's grandmother was very strict and didn't usually open up about her heritage, with one exception.
But we would go down the water and then she opened the floodgates. And she was like, so my parents, my mom taught me this. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, she's telling me like all this knowledge, right? She was a big, large woman. And she would stand with her hands on her hips and just stare all the way from the sky, all the way to the floor.
In fact, the serenity and comfort that Rosa's grandmother found in the water might be something that runs in the family. And it's helped Rosa, despite actually being scared of the open ocean, confront emotions that a lot of us don't like to think about. And even though Rosa and her family have all this experience, she told me that sometimes it can be very difficult to have confidence in it.
I still think to this day, I'm faking. I totally believe wholeheartedly I'm faking it. This is all a front. I think people are going to catch on. I'm not as smart as they think I am.
But following in her grandmother's footsteps, and with a connection deeper than any ocean, she's found the strength to keep moving.
So if I'm having a mental breakdown, or I got too much happening, or I just want to talk with the spirit guides, whatever, right? I go to the water. I'll go like ankle deep in the water, you know? So as scared as I am of the open ocean, but that's where I also go to find peace and to clear my mind and to reset myself.
And Rosa's right. These are things that all of us, including myself, have struggled with in one way or another. And even though you might feel alone, isolated, as though you're at the bottom of a deep, dark ocean, remember that you aren't. Down here, where there isn't any light, the water is still teeming with life, even if you can't see it.
When we went into this podcast, we wanted to find out what people's connections to water were.
For Mr. Nichols, Pema, and Rosa, there was something that called them to the water. A promising break from routine, a career, and a sense of self.
So, the next time you're out by the water, think of the stories you've heard today, and what yours might be.
Thanks to our mentor, Diana Kapulong, our editor, Mary Heise, and our program leader and editor, Kelsey Kupferer. Thank you to our interviewees,
Mark Nichols,
Pema Kataev,
and Rosa Hunter.
Additional thanks to Leela Kataev, Joe Weiss, Tim Carpenter, and Kate Stanley. Want more stories like these from Radioactive? Go to kuow.org/radioactive or follow our Instagram at kuowradioactive. Thanks for listening.